Okay, am I live? Let's check. YouTube? Excellent condition? Let's check. Rumble? Not quite going. Let's try it again. There we go.
Okay.
And let's try Odyssey. All systems are go. What's up, capitalist? Hey, it's your buddy Nate Houseman. I'm here to bring some of the news from the past week. So I guess Elon Musk is going buying Twitter. So I'll admit I have my heart set on watching this go to court, because there's going to be a lot of, a lot of dirty laundry to be aired from big tech and a lot of secrets, but this is also good. So if you saw from my, thumbnail to this video, a lot of nitwit Twitter employees are going to be shown the door. So this is a good development. And we got a lot more to talk about. So if you find this content viable, please share it with your friends. Hit the subscribe button, whether you're watching it on YouTube, Rumble, or Odyssey, or if you're listening to the podcast. And you can visit, there's a few ways you can support me financially if you feel the call to do so. Go to my website, natehouseman.net, click on the shop page, and click on, buy some merch. I also accept Bitcoin donations, and I'm working on a tip jar, so if you don't tip me during these live streams, that's cool. But if you want to tip me later on one of my tip jars and leave a comment, I will read those comments in a future video or a future stream or a future podcast. So probably do it through locals. So if you so keep that in mind. Also, I run a digital marketing and consulting business called Zyphos Web Marketing. So click on the link in the description. If you're a small business owner, or if you need an update to your website, I'd be happy to help. So I offer, I will revamp your website with WordPress, and I also offer digital marketing and SEO and Google Ads services. I'll connect you with one of my white label service providers. So please take advantage of that. There's so much you can do with a good website. There's so many cool business functions you can accomplish with a website that'll save you a lot of time and money. So give me a call. Click on the Work With Me tab and schedule a video conference through the Calendly app. Also, I'm huge on cryptocurrency, and the platform I like to use and urge other people to use is uphold.com. They have some really cool features that are very beginner friendly. You can actually get a debit card with Uphold, and if you have holdings with Bitcoin or Ethereum or any other cryptocurrency that you think is, that you're interested in, you can convert that easily into dollars and then spend that wherever. So online, at the store, pay your bills with that debit card. That's pretty cool. And what's very important to know is, after all the crashes that have happened with cryptocurrency, a lot of that is tied to lending. You've heard of Celsius going under, that crypto exchange. That's because they were lending people's, cryptocurrency to make more dollars. Uphold doesn't do that. They do not put your money at risk that way. So please give Uphold your consideration. The referral link is in the description. And let's get to it. I want to talk about the possible war with Russia and lots of goings on with the FBI and law enforcement in this country. That'll be the topic of this first segment. This is from ZeroHedge.com. Elon Musk posted a tweet yesterday with a very sensible peace plan between Ukraine and Russia. And Putin spokesperson have weighed in on Elon Musk's attempt at Ukraine peace deal. This is from Zero Hedge. The Russian presidency's office has responded to billionaire Elon Musk's Russia-Ukraine peace Twitter poll, which he put out Monday, and resulted in swift backlash among pundits who accused the Tesla and SpaceX founder of mimicking pro-Russian talking points. Musk pushed back against the avalanche of detractors, explaining that he's interested in exploring ways to arrive at a peaceful settlement and not continued escalation toward nuclear war. Putin spokesman Dmitry Peskov on Tuesday told reporters, "We consider it very positive that a man like Musk is looking for a peaceful way out of the situation around Ukraine," according to Interfax. Musk had a full of the idea of redoing last week's referendums on the four Ukrainian territories in the east, joining the Russian Federation under UN supervision. He also controversially said that as a basis of a peace deal, Ukraine would have to permanently cede Crimea. It was particularly the Crimea aspect that sparked immediate backlash and pile-on of pundits, journalists, and even diplomats, up to Ukrainian President Zelensky himself, who suggested this means Musk supports Russia. So, well, Salty Cracker, he says, Musk just pretty much exposed the whole political, you know, mindset of the so-called West. They actually want a war. You know, this was a very sensible deal, very sensible proposal, and the fact that the left, the deep state players in the U.S. and so-called NATO countries are, you know, balking at this, they actually want a war. Why do they want a war? Because it's a great cover story. They have so many, you know, crooked dealings going on, whether it's their plan to push eating bugs on us, whether they want to do their, you know, their great reset. They need a distraction. They thought they had a distraction with, you know, the COVID pandemic, but that they were going to stretch on for, you know, 10 or 15 years. But the rightful President Trump introduced, you know, a so-called vaccine. It wasn't a great, you know, situation, but he did, you know, cut them off. He did sweep their legs. He cut them off the pass. So, and he said, he insisted that people ought to have a choice to take it. That pretty much ended the lockdowns in this country, in most reasonable states. And it turned the conversation away from lockdowns, economic, you know, stagnation, economic, pretty much hamstringing of regular people. And it brought the conversation to, okay, what's the government going to allow people to do? And what do people have to, you know, do to take back control of their lives and their livelihoods? It's the same thing. The deep state players, they need a war because it's a cover story for whatever wicked schemes they have connected with the Great Reset. So Elon Musk just, you know, took that issue away from them. So what's going to happen? Well, I call this the fog of war stream because the fog of war is lifting thanks to the internet. In the past, you know, since ancient times, countries and kingdoms would go to war and they'd use propaganda to raise an army to whip up people's support to do terrible things, whether to invade their neighbors or defend their neighbors. That sort of propaganda is going extinct thanks to technology and thanks to the internet, thanks to communications technology that we have today. So this is actually a very good development that we're even talking about this, and that, you know, we're cutting off the deep state players at the pass here. Next article is kind of related to that. You know, the COVID pandemic, the COVID lockdowns were a way to muddy the waters around election 2020. Now, the crooks in government, they need a way to muddy the waters in election 2022, the midterms. This is from Gateway Pundit. Warning: Feds warn of election day violence. Is the FBI plotting their next assault on the American people? And there's Ray Epps, who was seen at the January 6th, you know, rally, trying to whip a crowd march on the Capitol. And why isn't Congress or the FBI investigating him like they investigate all the other people who were like whipped up and caught up in the Capitol during that incident? Federal government ran dozens of operatives on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. The FBI was running operative. The Capitol Police were running operative. The ATF was running operatives. The feds were running operatives in the Proud Boys. The feds were running operatives in the Oath Keepers. We're going to talk about the Oath Keepers a little bit here. Now CNN is reporting that federal officials are offering training on violent confrontations on Election Day. The federal officials are worried about violence on Election Day. Why? And of course, federal officials tipped off CNN on this threatening development. So, I don't want to read this part because YouTube might smack me down. I might come back to this during the last segment when I turn off YouTube and I'll ask everyone to come follow me on Rumble and Odyssey. But just get a glance at that. It's almost like the feds want violence. And there's a great article on Substack from, I believe it's June of this year, explaining that certain people who the media is saying are Trump supporters or conservatives who are going to get violent, they're probably imposters. This is from Scott DeGroat on Substack. His blog is called Scotty D's Infobombs. The Rise Above Movement, Patriot Front, and the Azov Battalion. How these movements are connected, funded, and weaponized. And I'm only going to read the first few paragraphs, but it'll give you an idea of false flags and how certain bad actors, they infiltrate well-meaning and honest groups and use them to commit evil acts. The author starts, I will be honest. January 6th has given me what some might call PTSD. We all witnessed the events that carried out that day, and it's a day none of us will forget. January 6th has been dissected and analyzed on my show ad nauseum, and we all know bad actors from Antifa, BLM, and the FBI were embedded in the majority of peaceful MAGA folks. Fast forward to this past weekend. This would have been June 14th. And a group of 31 Patriot Front members were arrested in Idaho. And what was the reaction from majority of people? The Fed boys got caught again. Look at those glowies. I don't blame people for having that take right away. But after digging on this group and others, we will discuss it's simply not true. It doesn't mean, though, they aren't leveraged for political gain for evil people to push radical change on the United States. I want to give two shout-outs to my co-hosts on my Saturday Night Show, Tom Ford and K.H. Farmer, for doing a bit of research for this. Their Truth Social links are okay. Yada, yada. As you know, all know in past articles that Scott DeGroat has written, to understand these groups, we have to find patterns of behavior, or what I was taught in school, modus operandi. We begin with the Rise Above movement. The group was originally called the DIY Division, but changed its name in 2017. This group is based out of Orange County in San Diego, and their founder is Robert Rundo. To summarize their ideology, they are neo-Nazis that have a fight club. They train to engage in fights, hand-to-hand combat, etc. They believe in physically beating down their enemies, like the brown shirts of in the old days. So a few screenshots of their criminal court documents and their get-togethers. After digging further into Rundo, we found an alarming amount of ties between him and Ukraine, and specifically the Azov Battalion. Have you heard of the Azov Battalion? Those are the Nazis that Putin says they're trying to rid Ukraine of. Those are like the neo-Nazis inside Ukraine's military who have, you might not have heard about in the mainstream media, but they are also embedded in honest, well-meaning members of Ukraine's military, and they're doing terrible things. Continuing. Rundo, at one point, was living in many European countries like Serbia and Bosnia and took many trips to Germany, Ukraine, and Italy with some of his members. Below is a picture of Rundo fighting a member of the Azov Battalion in Kyiv. Robert Rundo in blue, and training or sparring with an Azov member. With all the recent events that have gone down between Russia and Ukraine, we are all fully aware the United States government has no problem sending money and training to the military forces that reside there, and that certainly includes the Azov. The same groups that our United States government has deemed enemy number one, white supremacists, is the same group that is inadvertently paying for their training. What they got back from Europe, that training was used to carry out the violence seen in Charlottesville. More irony in the quote below. It's important to note that the Rise Above movement was heavily targeted by the U.S. government for their skirmishes with mostly white Antifa in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Berkeley, California. Similarly, disgraced alt-right leader Richard Spencer has not shied away from openly supporting the neo-Nazi group while promoting President Biden's policies regarding the conflict in Ukraine. So, did I highlight anything else in this article? No, but you get the idea. There are Nazis, there are so-called far-right groups committing acts of violence and or threatening certain acts, and the mainstream media and the deep state, they're going to blame these acts on Trump supporters when really it's these phony conservatives. I keep saying, I will say this in every video I make and every live stream I do. There are real conservatives and there are right-wingers. Real conservatives care about law and order, self-defense, national defense, preserving things that are valuable, and, you know, keeping true to the God who was revealed in the Bible. You also have to separate real liberals from leftists. Real liberals care about the environment. They care about the arts and sciences. They care about supporting the disadvantaged. They care about equal rights under the law. They care about, you know, lots of good things. Real liberals and real conservatives are not each other's enemies. They can mesh. The real problem is all these phony liberals, like the communists, like the Democrats, like the socialists, and all the phony conservatives, like the Rise Above movement, Patriot Front, and Azov Battalion, who pretend to have certain values, but use them to commit crimes or even acts of war. What the rightful President Trump has done is he's actually bringing true liberals and true conservatives together under the MAGA movement. That's what the elites in Washington and other capitals around, governments around the world, that's what drives them so bonkers. I didn't like Trump at first when he came down the escalator. I didn't think he was, you know, a principled conservative, but he's so much better than that. I realized he's a pragmatist, and when he told off the corporate media to their faces, that's when I came on board, because I hate the media so much. But moving on. So you might have heard about the Oath Keepers trial. It's being blasted in the mainstream media. I haven't heard much talk on conservative news websites about the trial, but I'm going to read this post by Just Human on Telegram. He's a pretty good analyst. The guy going by Just Human says, I know what the media is saying about this trial and its programming. They're trying to program the public with a narrative that Trump encouraged these people to do what they did, the Oath Keepers, the so-called Oath Keepers who were on trial. But the indictment shows this is not the case. Beginning just 2 days after we voted in November 2020, Oath Keepers began plotting violence, plotting a civil war, and plotting to obstruct the counting of electors and transfer power. This goes directly against the narrative that the Dems, Rhinos, and the corporate media have been pushing since January 6th. Furthermore, it is not what President Trump has asked anyone to do or what he warned or what he wanted. Quite the opposite. Trump wanted the counting of electors to happen so that objections could be made and the evidence of fraud introduced. That's what Trump's whole aim in January 6th was. Why he held that rally, why he held his own rally, and why he said, hey, let's peacefully go to the Capitol and make our voices heard. That's all he wanted. What the oathkeepers and others did by interrupting that count went directly against what Trump wanted. Never forget that. Exactly. So the Capitol riots, the so-called insurrection, served two purposes. First, one, they falsely were able to say that Trump caused and incited an insurrection. And two, it interrupted the legitimate lawful vote count going on in Congress to verify whether, you know, Trump or Biden had won the election. However, we are gathering information on people like Antifa, people like, you know, the Patriot Front and the Oath Keepers. Andy No reports, this is from Postmillennial. San Diego trans Antifa member pleads guilty for Pacific Beach attacks. This is from September 28th. This person, what the hell is wrong with their neck? Is that a tattoo? I hope that's a tattoo. 38-year-old Antifa member and career criminal in San Diego is the first to be convicted over a violent Antifa conspiracy to attack Donald Trump supporters and beachgoers at Pacific Beach in January 2021. Andy No tweets, and Andy No has been doing fabulous work, you know, chronicling Antifa and what all the bullcrap they're up to. Andy No tweets, for the first time, prosecutors are attempting to break a network of violent Antifa cells. San Diego DA charged 11 members, naming them explicitly as Antifa, for conspiring and carrying out assault that victimized 16, including minors. The assaults were numerous and lasted a long time along the boardwalk in Pacific Beach, San Diego, in January 2021. The Antifa members blinded targets with pepper spray before punching and kicking them. Here's part of the assault, and I don't want to show that because I might get flagged. But Eric Lewis Yatch of San Ysidro, California, admitted to conspiracy to riot, assaulting multiple persons, and unlawfully using tear gas as a weapon, plus other felonies in court on Wednesday, in a deal in which they is expected to be sentenced to nearly 5 years in state prison. Yatch is listed as a 6'4" tall male in jail records, but they told the court they are trans and that their name is Nikki. She has prior felony conviction in California for domestic violence. So this person, Eric, or Nikki, is a member of Antifa. He was a white male. And I've heard that there's kind of anxiety about being a white male in Antifa. Like, they don't want to be that. So that's why he went trans. But that's the kind of person we're dealing with here. The next story here, this is from Washington Times. FBI insiders say agents who took a knee during BLM protests were rewarded. And first, the good news is there are FBI insiders and whistleblowers who want to do the right thing and want to get the FBI back in the business of upholding the law and protecting the American people. They know just how rotten things are, and they want things to be fixed. And so they're blowing the whistle on these dipshits. The politicization of the FBI is being implemented by the promotion of liberal agents, left-wing agents, in positions of authority, and the punishment or dismissal of agents who support conservative causes, FBI insiders told the Washington Times. They said this institutionalizes a left-wing bias in the upper ranks of the nation's premier law enforcement agency. In one high-profile example, an FBI agent on duty demonstrated solidarity with Black Lives Matter marchers in Washington by taking a knee as protesters passed. The agent was rewarded with a promotion to a supervisor rank. And the article goes on. I would have to subscribe to read more of it. But that gives you an idea that, yeah, there are, you know, bad elements in the FBI, but there are also good elements. Cash Patel, Trump supporter extraordinaire and lawyer, prosecutor extraordinaire, he fires a warning shot. Wait till you see the acts of sexual complicity that the seventh floor of the FBI was engaging in. So he knows something's up. He knows there are some weird things going on in the upper ranks. Cash Patel sat with Jan Jakielik from the Epoch Times for an explosive interview this past week at Cash's Corner. During their conversation, Cash warned viewers on what is coming out next from the FBI whistleblowers. Cash says, "I think it's going to be an explosive topic. I don't think you've seen any real damaging information yet. And that's scary, right? Because this is very damaging. Because when you put it in perspective, you're going to see so much more damaging information. One of the other whistleblowers that came forward was on Dan Bongino's show. And he literally said, wait till you see the acts of sexual complicity that the seventh floor of the FBI is engaging in during this entire time. And I was the guy that exposed the Lisa Page, Peter Strzok thing. I know how that organization at that level of political operatives work. So there's a lot more coming." So what's happening is we're rooting out the bad elements. We're exposing them. You know, people wonder, you know, why can't we, you know, arrest Hillary? Why can't we, you know, go after Peter Strzok? Or why can't we go after the Russia collusion hoaxers? The swamp is deep and wide, and we have to expose all of it before we can really make a move. Otherwise, the Hydra's heads will grow back. So we're in the exposure phase right now. We are lifting the fog of war and really pulling back and exposing the termites eating away at the house here. I want to end the segment on some really good news. It sounds, you know, scary at first, but this is a great thing. Police officers are walking off job, running for office to push back against defund police movement. This is from Washington Times again. America's cops are fed up. They say they've been defunded, scapegoated as violent racists, vilified for the mistakes of a few rogue officers, and challenged by sharp increases in shootings and killings. Now some are pushing back in a way they never expected, walking off the job to run for elected office. More than 100 current or former police officers are on the ballot this year for federal, state, and local offices, with more than 90 running for seats in their state legislatures. Nearly all are running as Republicans. The officers, some of whom have never run for office before, have tagged the movements as the common sense wave. So I'd be interested to know how many have been endorsed by Trump, but this is what you gotta do. And here's the real purpose of the whole defund the police, you know, hashtag or movement. The deep state doesn't like local law enforcement. They don't like the fact that local level law enforcement, whether it's police or sheriffs, it's decentralized. You know, there might be crooked cops in one city, but that doesn't mean those crooked cops have, you know, control over a different city. There's some cities who are run wonderfully. And the fact that, you know, it's decentralized, it's broken up, means that the people can vote with their, you know, their feet. They can move to a city or a state that's run better than the state they're currently in. That's why so many people are leaving California for the red states. That's why Florida is booming, because there's better law enforcement, for one thing. But the deep state players, the criminals who have the swamp, they want a nationalized police force. And yeah, the FBI is part of that. They want nationalized police force at the local level that they can control centrally. And that's, you know, that's the real ulterior motive behind the whole defund the police movement. So what's going to happen is in cities and states with fair elections, these cops are going to turn things around. They're going to reform the police. They're going to reform the police departments through City Hall or the sheriff's departments, and they're gonna clean up. And I think part of that's also gonna have to they're also gonna have to deal with some district attorneys who are pretty crooked. You've probably heard about George Soros, who funded so many elections of far left DAs who are not doing anything to prosecute criminals in certain cities. So I will. Before we move on, let's check if I have any comments. And I hate looking this up because the browsers take forever to load the chat pages. But Even if I don't have any chats right now, you can send me on Locals, and I'll read them maybe in either in exclusive content or in a future video. Big Three says we're in the building, Prophet Rob. I know you, Prophet Rob. I'm not reading that. Prophet Rob's a troll who I used to work with, and he's got nothing better to do than make a fool of himself. Robert the Genius. Okay, that's fine. Moving on. Here's the big story of today, October 4th. Elon Musk has decided to proceed with his Twitter buyout under one condition. This is BeckerNews.com. Tech billionaire Elon Musk has reportedly proposed to proceed with his buyout of influential social media platform Twitter at a price of $54.20 per share. This was the same as his initial April offer. So, in September, a whistleblower, Peter Mudge Zatko, a former security chief that was fired in January, testified before a Senate panel. Zatko was terminated after it was discovered that a number of foreign agents may have penetrated Twitter, which has massive security holes that could allow any engineer to access sensitive user data, including geolocation data. Musk's legal team cited the whistleblower claims as among the reasons he is seeking termination of the deal. But apparently, Musk has reversed himself. Musk announced in early June that he would abandon his Twitter offer after the company failed to provide satisfactory information about the fake bot accounts. Twitter sued the Tesla CEO to force him to uphold the deal. Now, did he cave? As earlier reported, Twitter's documents could help the billionaire entrepreneur take over the social media giant for a lower asking price than previously offered. It may be the only hope for salvaging a platform that promises even more censorship of conservative voices ahead of the 2022 midterms. Well, I haven't been on Twitter much today other than to read a few posts. But apparently, the leftists on Twitter, not the liberals, the leftists, are shitting their pants and shitting their skirts. Who's wearing what? But they're not happy that Twitter is... the Elon is going to clean house. So I wanted there to be a court case so we could air out all, you know, Twitter's dirty laundry and expose the dark money network between big tech and the government and possibly the central banking cabal. But this is also good. Twitter is going to be a free speech platform. Thanks to Elon Musk. He's going to clean house. I saw a video by Dr. Steve Turley, and he said, so many job applications have poured into Twitter since Elon Musk offered to buy it. Like real, honest, you know, tech workers who want to do the right thing and want to do quality work, they want to work at Twitter if Elon is in charge. And all right, so be it. This is going to be good. Now that Elon is going to, you know, be in control of Twitter, he's going to have access to all of their data. And he can reveal whatever he wants. So we'll just have to sit back and wait. And this is not a moment too soon because of all these other stories that we're going to look at. Libs of TikTok suspended by Twitter again for hateful content. This is from September 29th. Twitter has allegedly once again suspended the Libs of TikTok account for posting hateful content. Libs of TikTok, all they do, or all the... all the lady who runs it does, they just post left-wing nonsense on TikTok and share it on Twitter and just share for all the world to see. I think that's all they do. I don't follow with TikTok, but if there's a threat, if Twitter's so threatened by that, that says a lot. Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon reported the new suspension on Wednesday from his Twitter account, personal Twitter account. Twitter has once again hit Libs of TikTok with a 7-day suspension for so-called hateful conduct. No specific tweets were flagged. We've since fired off another letter to Twitter. They're on notice that we will sue them if they permanently suspend us. Suspend us. It's Babylon Bee, he tweeted. Another little item of bullcrap. This is from Search Engine Journal. I'm going to tell you why that's so significant. But they're reporting Twitter ads suspended by Top Brands because of child exploitation. Top Brands are suspending their ads due to Twitter's inability to detect and stop CP. Struggle smuggle with minors. At least 30 major advertisers had dropped advertising on Twitter after it was revealed that their ads were displayed alongside tweets soliciting illegal child exploitation content. For example, a promoted tweet by a Scottish Rite Children's Hospital in Texas was shown alongside toxic tweet related to child sexual abuse. So Twitter is you know, they're supporting child trafficking. They're supporting child porn. And I hate saying that. Am I going to get fined for saying this? If you don't like this on YouTube, please follow me on Rumble and Odyssey. But the fact that Search Engine Journal is basically a business blog telling you how to do social media search engine advertising for your business. They have articles about search engine optimization, running ads for your business, and running ads on social media. The fact that they're dipping into this topic is huge. So all the deep state shenanigans, that all the illegal activity that is coming out of big tech, it's working its way into like non-political media here. From Becker News, political censorship campaign unconstitutionally targeted millions of Americans. Now, do I want to read this whole article? Yeah, I think I will. Because this is pretty good. Not good, but it's a good article. The United States government is unconstitutionally targeting millions of Americans for their political speech by directly contracting with private third parties that flag their viewpoints for alleged misinformation. The federal government has contracted with at least five private companies or public nonprofits to flag Americans' views on everything from COVID-19 to the 2020 election. In an editorial at Just the News, John Solomon and Greg Piper reported on four of these groups, but the report suggests that the radical left's operation to chill free speech is just the tip of the iceberg. A consortium of four private groups worked with departments of Homeland Security and State to censor massive numbers of social media posts they considered misinformation during the 2020 election. And its members then got rewarded with millions of federal dollars from the Biden administration afterwards, according to interviews and documents obtained by Just the News. The Election Integrity Partnership is back in action again for the 2022 midterm elections, raising concerns among civil libertarians that a chilling new form of public-private partnership to evade the First Amendment's prohibition of government censorship may be expanding, the report adds. Just the News editorial notes four of the EIP's member organizations. What they're basically saying is the government is hiring contractors, either corporate or privately owned, to do their dirty work, is what this article amounts to. The consortium is comprised of four member organizations: Stanford Internet Observatory, the University of Washington Center for an Informed Public, the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab, and social media analytics firm Graphica, the article adds. It set up a concierge-like service in 2020 that allowed federal agencies like Homeland Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, and State's Global Engagement Center to file tickets requesting the online story links and social media posts be censored or flagged by big tech. Three left-wing groups, Democratic National Committee, Common Cause, and the NAACP, were also empowered, like the federal agencies, to file tickets seeking censorship of content, the article goes on. A Homeland-funded collaboration, the Elections Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center, also had access. As the author has noted before, there's another partner with the U.S. State Department, and the Department of Homeland Security that flags websites for alleged misinformation on issues like COVID and elections. NewsGuard. Elon Musk tweets, who funds these organizations that want to control your access to information? Let's investigate. Then Kyle Becker says, this one is pretty egregious. It actually has partnerships with the U.S. State Department and Department of Defense. I have no idea how its behavior can be considered constitutional. It should be sued for maliciously depriving Americans of their rights. It should be noted that the U.S. Constitution not only guarantees Americans' right to free speech, but the right to consume information freely in the marketplace of ideas. The right to speak and the right to publish under the First Amendment has been interpreted widely to protect individuals and society from government attempts to suppress ideas and information, and to prevent government censorship of books, magazines, newspapers, as well as art, film, music, and materials on the internet. The American Library Association notes, the Supreme Court and other courts have held conclusively that there is a First Amendment right to receive information as a corollary to the right to speak. Justice William Brennan elaborated on this point in 1965. He says, the opinion says, the protection of the Bill of Rights goes beyond the specific guarantees to protect from congressional abridgment those equally fundamental personal rights necessary to make the express guarantees fully meaningful. I think the right to receive publications is such a fundamental right. The dissemination of ideas can accomplish nothing if otherwise willing addressees are not free to receive and consider them. It would be a barren marketplace of ideas that had only sellers and no buyers. This is from Lamont versus Postmaster General decision in 1965. The Supreme Court reaffirmed the right to receive information as a fundamental right protected under the U.S. Constitution when it considered whether a local school board violated the Constitution by removing books from a school library. The entry goes on. By virtue of the 14th Amendment, the First Amendment's constitutional right of free speech and intellectual freedom also applies to state and local governments. Government agencies and government officials are forbidden from regulating or restricting speech or other expression based on its content or viewpoint. Criticism of the government, political dissatisfaction, and advocacy of unpopular ideas that people may find distasteful or against public policy are nearly always protected by the First Amendment. Former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, in July 2021, however, explained the Biden administration's method of getting rid of politically undesirable posts on social media platforms. Will the White House publicly release information on posts that it considers misinformation on vaccines that has asked Facebook to block? A reporter asked Psaki. First of all, we have not asked Facebook to block any individual posts, Psaki claimed. The way this works is that there are trends that are out there on social media platforms. You're aware of them. We are aware of them. Anyone in the public can be aware of them. There's also data that we look at the many social media platforms, like many of you also look at data, in terms of trends that you report on it, she continued, which is to be expected given the number of people who get their information from social media. It's up to social media platforms to determine what their application is of their own rules and regulations, Psaki explained. So we just certainly raise where we have concerns about information that's inaccurate, that is traveling out there in whatever platform it's traveling on. This paragraph's not written well, but the Liberty Center's Harmy Dillon explains in an op-ed at Fox News, this coordination between state and private entities to regulate political speech is blatantly unconstitutional. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki on Thursday made groundbreaking admissions revealing the Biden administration's agenda of deciding what speech Americans are allowed to hear, Dillon writes. Psaki admitted, members of the White House senior staff are in regular touch with the social media platforms for the purpose of addressing this big issue of misinformation, she continued. Whether it's a member of the White House's senior staff, the Secretary of State of California, or anyone else carrying the weight of the government, the unholy collusion between big tech and big government isn't just another shameful example of the censorship we're witnessing internationally. In America, is blatantly unconstitutional, Dillon added. As recently as 2019, the Supreme Court reasoned a private entity can qualify as a state actor subject to First Amendment protections under three circumstances, Dillon pointed out, citing three cases. When the private entity performs a traditional, exclusive public function, such as Jackson versus Metropolitan Edison Company, 1974, Edison would be probably the power company, When the government compels the private entity to take a particular action, see Bloom versus Uretsky, or when the government acts jointly with the private entity, see Lugar versus Edmondson Oil from 1982. Dillon also pointed at the case filed by the Liberty Center, O'Hanley versus Padilla, which tackles California's coordination with big tech on censoring criticism of the 2020 election. In both cases, the government is working with and directing social media platform proxies to remove user expression that clearly would enjoy this protection of the First Amendment if the government tried to censor it directly. Such joint action runs afoul of established SCOTUS precedent, Dillon notes. The U.S. government is violating the constitutional charter that brought it into existence by violating the rights of Americans in states across the country. If the Democratic Party persists in its flagrant disregard of states' rights and individual rights, it may eventually find that the United States may no longer be a united one. Well, there's good news at the end of this segment, but we're gonna forge on here. This is also from Becker News. We own the science. World Economic Forum member reveals how the global elites work with Google to censor critics. This is from a couple days ago. UN Secretary for Global Communications, Melissa Fleming, a World Economic Forum member, openly revealed how global elites work with Google and other digital platforms to censor information they deem to be politically undesirable. She says, we partner with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you'll find all kinds of UN resources, Fleming revealed. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. And her definition of distorted may differ from yours, and that's why that's a problem. So we are becoming much more proactive, she went on. You know, we own the science. And we think that the world, you know, should know it. And the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active. This is from... Now, there's a clip of her on Rumble of her saying this, so go check that out whenever you get the chance. Her name is Melissa Fleming. And give her hell. And in another case of big tech collusion with government, Christopher Ruffo has a thread on Twitter. The American Medical Association is asking big tech and the Department of Justice to censor, deplatform, investigate, and prosecute journalists who question the orthodoxy of radical gender surgeries for minors, arguing that public criticism is disinformation. Well, it's not up to big tech to decide what disinformation is. It's up to the evidence. I sell t-shirts on my website that say, I don't care about your title. I care about your evidence. So please, buy one of those, wear it proudly, and spread the word. Ruffo goes on, this is now the left's playbook. Last year, the National School Board Association, Department of Justice, and FBI worked together to label parents who opposed critical race theory as domestic terrorists. They wanted to stifle dissent, suppress speech, and criminalize opposition. We need for our local fascism expert, at Jason Intrader, to let us know if a collaboration between the state security services and the largest corporations to silence political opposition is fascism. Or if that's moot because the current president is an orange colored. The morality of the situation is blindingly clear. Threatening hospitals is wrong. Censoring journalists is wrong. Criminalizing political opposition is wrong. Surgically removing a child's organs is wrong. If gender-affirming care is so good, and activists and doctors who promote it and profit from it should defend their practices in the realm of public opinion. In a democracy, everyone gets to weigh in on important issues, not just regime-approved apparatchiks. Bingo. Children's hospitals say, we give children puberty blockers, hormones, and gender surgeries. Conservatives say, they give children puberty blockers, hormones, and gender surgeries. The regime says, that's harmful disinformation that should be censored, criminalized, and suppressed. So, exactly. This is why Elon Musk is buying Twitter and why he's taking control. And that's just one front in the free speech, you know, struggle. Here's another very important development. The Supreme Court agrees to hear a case challenging big tech's Section 230 legal protections. Now, in that Becker article I read, it says that utilities like, you know, power companies are required, you know, they will, you know, they can act as, you know, tools of the government. I think what this case is going to be, you know, be hinging on is whether big tech companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google, whether or not they count as utilities and they should serve everyone, not just pick and choose who the winners and losers are. A small business can get away with, you know, not serving certain customers or favoring certain clients because they're privately owned. If a utility that has certain arrangements with the government does that, they're violating your rights. The U.S. Supreme Court agreed Monday to take up a case that challenges legal protection for big companies over user-generated content that could potentially usher in a new era of moderating freedom of expression on the internet. The case Ronaldo Gonzalez et al. Versus Google LLC will be heard asking whether tech companies make target recommendations. Axios reports the case alleges YouTube aided and abetted in the death of Noemi Gonzalez, a 23-year-old American woman who was killed in the 2015 ISIS attacks in Paris, along with 130 others, and injured more than 100. Family of Gonzalez sued Google, the parent company of YouTube, arguing the platform's algorithms allowed and recommended terrorist-related content from ISIS target users with hundreds of radicalizing views, inciting violence, and recruiting potential supporters. Google argued the claims are barred under Section 230 and has since moved to dismiss the lawsuit, Axios claims. The Hill reports a judge dismissed the case, prompting the family to appeal to the nation's highest court. Gonzalez's case taps into another controversial topic within this Communications Decency Act, which has a provision tucked inside the law, otherwise known as Section 230, that says no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. The law has seen criticism from Democrats and Republicans, who argue it grants too much power to social media companies and says it favors one party over the other concerning censoring or bolstering content. Former Libertarian U.S. Congressman Justin Amash tweeted, "Regime Republican and Democrats want to destroy Section 230 because it protects freedom of speech. Dismantling Section 230 will lead to more censorship of speech that challenges their authority, giving those in power more influence and control over public discourse." And Tennessee Republican Senator Marshall Blackburn said in a tweet, "She looks forward to hearing what the court has to say on the issue. For too long, big tech has used Section 230 as a shield to avoid accountability for its decisions, including the hosting of child sexual abuse material, violent content, and the removal of conservative content," Blackburn said. NetChoice, a trade group for tech corporations, advocated for the industry to NBC News, saying the tech groups need the flexibility to keep or remove content. "Without moderation, the internet will become a content cesspool filled with the vile content of all sorts and making it easier for things like terrorist recruitment," said NetChoice counsel Chris Marchese. The Washington Examiner reports that others said changing the provision would produce larger impacts on smaller organizations. Section 230 is the foundation that today's internet is built on, supporting both speech online and the ability of internet platforms to take down harmful content, Adam Kovacevich, CEO of Chamber of Progress, said according to the Washington Examiner. Eroding that wouldn't just impact large platforms. It would hammer smaller websites from community newspapers to niche blogs. So then we'll have to go back to cases mentioned in this Becker article, whether or not the government really is involved in big tech platforms. So let's see here. Robert the Genius, this is live on Rumble. So we're moving on to the economic news here. So it looks like the dollar is gaining steam here. Actually, no, excuse me, it's dropping. And that's causing the stock market to rebound. This is from Zero Hedge. U.S. stocks continue to rally, and the dollar pullback persisted amid soft data releases. So I'm just going to read the highlights here. U.S. stocks continue to rally, with advances led by small caps, which saw all major indices post gains of at least 2.8%. So there's kind of an inverse relationship between the strength of the dollar and markets like the stock market or cryptocurrency or precious metals. The stronger the dollar is, which is measured by the dollar index compared to all other currencies in the world, the stronger the dollar is, the more money goes out of these stocks because they're seen as inflation hedges and risk assets, you know, risk assets. So the DXY retreated to levels not seen since mid-September amid pressure from the optimistic risk tone and with markets pricing more dovish. That's a lot of word salad here. Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. In the past 3 months, 46% of consumers had to pay for at least one unexpected expense, averaging $1,400 each. So there is a lot of economic, pain going on. This is from thestreet.com. You've surely seen examples of people whose finances have taken a strong turn for the worse since the COVID pandemic began in March 2020. A consumer finance survey by Payments, a financial news service, and Lending Club, an online loan platform, fleshes out the anecdotes with some numbers. It shows that 59.3% of Americans were living paycheck to paycheck as of July, up from 54% a year earlier. Even among those earning more than $100,000 a year, 43% are living paycheck to paycheck, up from 34% in July 2021. So this is kind of like a little snapshot of the economic situation for regular people. I just want to point to this here. So many stocks are down. It looks like real estate is starting to, and the real estate market is starting to take a hit. Real estate's been crazy since the pandemic. And real estate is finally taking a dive. This is from the street again. Three stocks to consider as REITs take a dive. REIT stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. It's a type of stock that you can invest in to support real estate investing. Real estate investment trusts this year have been hammered by soaring interest rates, and the FTSE NAREIT REIT index dropping 28% year to date. That's worse than the S&P's 25% slide. Rising rates hurt REITs because higher yields on bonds make them more attractive compared with REITs. In addition, REITs borrow heavily to finance their real estate purchases, and higher rates increase their borrowing costs. Then the article says there are three kinds of REITs here that you can still invest in that might make you money, such as industrial REITs, such as like manufacturing or warehouses and distribution centers, apartment REITs, which is kind of unsettling because this is where people live, and that's going to drive up the cost of rent, and data center REITs. But this ties into the next article that I want to share, hat tip to a Raging Golden Eagle. He covered this last night. Remote work wipes $453 billion off real estate value, according to the Register. Now, I think this is funny. An estimated $453 billion in commercial real estate value appears to have been lost due to a surge in remote work and reduced demand for office space during the COVID-19 pandemic. This is not good news for investors and pension funds who rely on the values of these buildings. The U.S. National Economic Research Bureau, a nonprofit, non-governmental organization, released the figures, Office Real Estate Apocalypse. While that study focused on New York City, data from 105 office markets across America from 2000 to 2022 was included in this fall report. Before the coronavirus outbreak, 95% of office space was occupied in the United States, was occupied in the United States, according to the agency. By the end of March 2020, the occupancy rate had fallen to 10%. As of just a few weeks ago, the office was still at 47% occupancy, according to NBER. Across the United States, leasing revenues fell 17.5% from January 2020 to May 2022. This is not only due to fewer offices being occupied, but also due to shorter rental periods and lower monthly fees. And staff are said to be able to work from home most or all of the week, thus requiring much less floor space. So I am all for the work from home revolution. Just, you know, not having to commute, that's a huge deal. That's a huge time saver. You know, not having to spend money on gas. That's going to help. That would help a lot of people. So if you have like a freelance job that you can work from home from, or that you can work from like a coffee shop, or in a place with Wi-Fi, more power to you. The digital nomad lifestyle is pretty interesting, but pretty appealing, but not having to dress up, clock in, and have your boss hovering over you in the cubicle farm, that's also very appealing. So more power to you. We're going to move into central bank nonsense and cryptocurrency now. Central banks add gold for the fifth straight month. Central banks globally added to their net gold holdings for the fifth consecutive month in August, according to the latest data released by the World Gold Council. On net, central banks, these would be banks like the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the central banks that really have governments under their control. Central banks added 20 more tons of gold to their reserves. Three banks drove buying in August, and there were no notable sellers. So far this year, central banks have added over 300 tons of gold to their holdings. They probably mean holdings, but they mistyped it here. So now that, you know, the markets are going down, stocks are down, crypto's down, precious metals are down, all, you know, not counting this week's bounce. All these central banks are probably buying it cheap. Now, why do they want gold if they can, you know, just print money through their own system and through the national treasury? They probably know something. They probably know that gold is an asset. It's very important. It's very important to hold on to assets and not just money. So this is a big clue that something big is going on here. Now from CoinDesk, asset management giant Fidelity adds crypto offerings with Ethereum index fund. So Fidelity, you know, you might have a 401k with them through your employer. I used to back when I worked at, I think it was Yellow Book. No, that was Morgan Stanley. It might have been different years I had Fidelity or Morgan Stanley, but asset managers, you know, like Fidelity, they're on people's retirement plans. And the fact that they're adding crypto is a big sign. It's a big deal. Fidelity's new Ethereum index fund will offer clients access to Ether, the second largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization. The fund has raised about $5 million since sales started on September 26. According to a filing with the SEC, the minimum investment is $50,000. Fidelity launched its crypto-focused institutional custody and trading platform, Fidelity Digital Assets, in 2018. The firm also offers two exchange-traded crypto funds dedicated to the metaverse and digital payments, respectively. Last month, news broke that Fidelity was considering offering crypto trading to its retail brokerage clients. So retail would be normal people who aren't part of a big hedge fund or bank, just regular folks. So that might be someone with a 401k or an IRA, or maybe someone who day trades, you know, at home in their spare time. So this apparently is okay with the government, you know, Fidelity offering crypto investing through an asset manager. In other silly news with crypto, Kim Kardashian's Ethereum Max promotion was a gift to the SEC. So Kim Kardashian, she just pled guilty to fraud, and she paid a fine. Lisa Braganca, former SEC enforcement branch chief, joined First Mover to discuss the implications for celebrities after Kardashian was fined for promoting a crypto token. So she was involved in the pump and dump scheme, it looks like. Ethereum Max is not the real Ethereum, apparently. Social media and reality TV celebrity Kim Kardashian's fine for promoting cryptocurrency Ethereum Max was a gift to the SEC, said Lisa Braganca, former enforcement chief, branch chief at the U.S. agency. The SEC is always looking for a way to get the message out to the public. When somebody with the kind of following that Kim Kardashian makes a blunder like this, that's a layup for the SEC, Braganca said on CoinDesk TV's First Mover Tuesday. Earlier this week, the Keeping Up with the Kardashians star was ordered to pay $1.26 million fine and settling charges filed by the SEC. The agency said she not only promoted Emacs to her millions of social media followers, but didn't disclose the $250,000 payment she received for that promotion. In the settlement, where she did not admit wrongdoing, she agreed to cooperate with the SEC's ongoing investigation and not promote crypto assets for 3 years. So, this is a black eye for the crypto community, but it just goes to show you, do your research. Maybe stick with the big ones like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And this might also be a case of some bad actors trying to mix in with honest individuals and the honest majority trying to give a legitimate enterprise a black eye. Bitcoin is a tool of freedom. Ethereum Max is not. So many so-called cryptocurrencies are just pump and dump schemes or outright scams. And that takes a lot away from legitimate cryptos like Bitcoin and Ether, and also Polkadot and Cardano and things like that. So you got to learn discernment. So let's move on here. Did Robert get bored? So just checking on chats here, and that's fine. I'm not big news yet, but the fact that I have a troll, a heckler, is actually kind of cool. Okay, here. So I'm going to turn off YouTube because we're going to talk about things that YouTube doesn't like. So I think the video will stop playing, but click on one of the links to either Rumble or Odyssey, and I'll see you there. So I'll give you a little bit of time here. If you want to, again, support my work, go to my website, nathanhausman.net, and buy some merch, or click on the link to Uphold and get on Bitcoin movement. Or if you're a business owner and you need to revamp your online presence, click on the link to my business, ZiphosWebMarketing.com, and I will help you out. And these pages are taking their time loading, but such is the way of the internet in the Midwest. So if you're watching me on YouTube, peace out, or follow me on Rumble and Odyssey. I'm clicking this button right here. And I think we're still on Rumble and Odyssey. Yep. All right. So now to the juicy stuff. Now you heard about the Nord Stream pipeline getting blown up in the ocean. And I'm going to read this analysis by the Gateway Pundit because this is just too good. The Deep State wants to blame Russia for this, but it's probably the Deep State themselves who are behind this. This is a guest post by Bill Hennessy. And looks like he's got a Substack page. Three deep water explosions destroyed the Nord Stream pipelines under the Baltic Sea on Monday. This was last week, last Monday. While the mainstream media and governments reported leaks in the pipelines following sudden pressure drops to zero, Swedish seismologists knew better. One of the three explosions measures 2.3 on the Richter scale of earthquake intensity, but this was no earthquake. It was an explosion like a gigantic undersea mine. Via Reuters, Bjorn Lund, seismologist at the Swedish National Seismic Network at Uppsala University, said seismic data gathered by him and Nordic colleagues showed that the explosions took place in the water and not in the rock under the seabed. The explosions guarantee Germany and the European Union won't go wobbly with regard to sanctions against Russian energy imports. The damage to pipelines will take months to repair, and repairs are unlikely to begin until next summer. Even if Germany were to cry uncle, as civil unrest intensifies over lack of heat and energy, even if Russia decided to turn the power back on, the conduit for Russian gas to Europe is broken. TASS reports details of the explosions. The first explosion was recorded at about 2 o'clock in the morning on Monday, the second at 7 to 4 p.m. on the same day. Gas leak warnings were issued on Monday at 1:52 p.m. and 8:41 p.m., respectively. Vessels passing through the area reportedly notified the Coast Guard of the seething on the sea surface. Lund argues that there are usually no military exercises in the area of the incident, which could theoretically cause damage to the pipelines. No military exercises were in the area on Monday, but there were military exercises in the area recently enough. We'll look into those exercises in a bit. So, Nord Stream is dead. The question becomes, who done it? Means, motive, and opportunity. To fix a crime on a suspect, police try to establish means, motive, and opportunity. If the victim was shot in his home with no signs of forced entry or struggle, the suspects will be people known to the victim who had access to the murder weapon and a reason to kill him. Take away any one element, means, gun, motive, gain, or opportunity, access, and the case falls apart. If we balance all three elements against the reasonable suspects, one suspect stands out. The means eliminates most suspects. Only a government with an advanced naval warfare capability could have executed the sabotage. That limits the suspects to Germany, Great Britain, France, the United States, Russia, and China. The means also involves proximity. Chinese or French naval activities in the area would have raised flags. Geography would seem to preclude the United States, except for the fact that the U.S. Navy operates in every ocean in the world with advanced warfighting capabilities. So the list of suspects with the means to destroy Nord Stream is down to the U.K., U.S., Russia, and Germany. Now we shift to motive. Germany has no motive to destroy its energy lifeline. Germany is highly dependent on Russian natural gas. Entire German industries are being nationalized because of the lack of energy due to sanctions against Russia and Russia reducing flow through the pipelines. Germans held massive protests over the weekend demanding Germany pull out of the anti-Russian alliance in exchange for a return of energy. Great Britain has also suffered under the sanctions imposed after Russia invaded Ukraine in February. The British economy is in shambles, forcing the UK's central bank to pivot back to quantitative easing. Additionally, the new government in the UK has its hands full with forming a government. They have a new prime minister and a new king. It is unlikely the Brits would attempt such a caper. Russia seems to have a motive, inflict long-term pain on Europe for sending lethal arms to Ukraine. But Russia didn't need to blow up the pipelines. Russia controls the valves that send or haul gas flow to Europe, and she's already turned off the spigot. Russia paid for a portion of the pipeline and expects to resume profitable energy exports to Europe once the war with Ukraine settles. Why would Russia cut off its own nose? That leaves the United States. So what are its motives? First, the U.S. became the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas to Europe once Russia cut off the flow. German dependence on on U.S. liquefied natural gas is a carrot to keep Germany in the sanctioned alliance. With winter approaching and German unrest on the rise, the State Department would have been concerned the Germans would go wobbly, reduce sanctions, cut off arms to Ukraine, and beg Putin for energy. The loss of the Nord Stream pipelines eliminates that path up to renewed gas imports to Germany. Second, the Biden family has long been tangled up in natural gas in Ukraine. Hunter Biden was on the board of Ukraine's largest natural gas company, a position that provided Ukrainian oligarchs with access to Joe Biden. Hunter, who has no experience in energy, made millions from the deal, and Ukraine got a bought and paid for president in the United States. Well, is he the president? Third, Democrat Biden needs to stanch the popularity bleeding that threatens to kill Democrat control of Congress come November. So only the United States has a compelling reason to destroy Europe's energy lifeline from Russia. Only the United States has both the means and the motive. But what about opportunity? Sea Power magazine, the official magazine of the Navy League, reported in June on a U.S. exercise in the Baltic Sea, directly over the spots where two massive undersea explosions took out the Nord Stream pipeline. Sea Power story highlights new technology allowing the Navy to detonate targets from miles away. An additional critical objective was to continue to increase the communication range and data transfer capability to give the operators more flexibility in mine hunting operations. Advancements in communication technology, demonstrated this year, have shown a significant improvement in operating ranges over currently used systems. This provides additional standoff flexibility to the U.S. Navy in conducting safe mine hunting operations. In other words, the Navy had the opportunity to plant explosives on the pipes in June for remote detonation at the time of the so-called supposed president's choosing. And the world's largest amphibious ship, USS Kearsarge, was recently in the area. And only the United States had this opportunity. Also in June, Operation Ball Tops 22 was underway. The CIA allegedly warned Germany that sabotage to the pipelines was imminent. Article from Spiegel. What's more, Biden and other administration officials have signaled a willingness to use pipelines as a means of war. Joe Biden threatened to end the Nord Stream if Russia invaded. Only the United States had all three elements of a crime: means, motive, and opportunity. But possessing all three elements of a crime does not make one guilty. In addition to means, motive, and opportunity, the guilty party must also have the moral degeneracy to perpetrate the crime. Anyone who carries a gun has the means, motive, and opportunity to shoot someone at some point. But almost no legal gun owners ever commit the crime. Why? Because most of us have moral consciences formed well enough to stop us from acting on impulse. We are, as Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, willing to suffer many abuses before pulling the trigger. So we must ask, does this supposed United States administration have the impulse to control to resist using its massive military capabilities? Or is the administration full of people who would shoot someone over mere irritation? To answer that, think of the FBI storming the home of a pro-life minister, robbing safe deposit boxes after lying to a judge to obtain a warrant, raiding the home of the current president's primary opponent in the next election, or threatening pro-life pregnancy counselors in Minnesota. Think also about the administration's push to castrate little boys and cut the breasts off little girls for crimes of being too feminine or too masculine. Think about the United States' fascination with drag shows for children in which a five-year-old girl massages the organ of a drag queen on stage to arouse her parents' prurient interests, as the Gateway Pundit reported recently. Is the United States capable of committing a high crime on the Baltic Sea? Of course it is. The United States under Joe Biden has no moral compass. It is a rudderless and deranged vessel sailing toward base pleasure, using power and violence as its only justification for actions. While we don't know for sure whether the United States blew up the pipeline, we do know for sure the United States has the means, motive, opportunity, and moral deficit necessary to drive the world to the edge of Armageddon in pursuit of its power for its elites. And a former Polish Minister of Defense and current member of the European Parliament was quick to affix the blame or credit for the explosion. Radek Sikorski, member of Parliament, European Union, says, "Thank you, USA," in a tweet. Stay tuned. Nord Stream could be the biggest story of our lifetime. So I would not say it's really the United States. It's really the deep state that did this. But a very compelling case for opposing the Biden regime. And what will happen if we prove that the election was stolen? Can Donald Trump fix all this? I think he's offered to. But let's move on here. because this is a big development. This is from the Office of the Inspector General's website on the government, stateoig.gov, Ukrainian response oversight. This is a wordy post here, but let's kind of get through it here, and I'll tell you what it means. The Ukraine-related activities of the Department of State and the U.S. Agency for Global Media are a top oversight priority for the Office of the Inspector General. The complexity, scale, and timing of efforts in response to the situation in Ukraine demand robust oversight. We are leveraging our extensive knowledge of the programs and operations of the Department and USAGM to develop a plan that provides timely and critical information for Congress and the U.S. taxpayer. In other words, they're watching the money that's going into Ukraine, or at least they're saying they are. Now, is this a cover your ass situation, or are there honest and ethical and patriotic members of the Office of the Inspector General who are actually looking to find out where the bodies are buried? Multiple federal agencies are responding to the crisis, and OIG is coordinating with offices across the Inspector General community, including Inspector General offices at the U.S. Department of Defense and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. A variety of working groups comprised of auditors, inspectors, investigators, and investigators are meeting on a regular basis to collaborate and achieve results. At OIG, we are deploying our resources, including recent supplemental funding to target fraud, waste, and abuse in three high-risk areas: security assistance, humanitarian and economic assistance, diplomatic operations and programs. Below are links to the Department of Defense and USAID Inspector General offices, as well as additional Ukraine-related oversight information. So the Department of Defense, social media. So Department of Defense is huge. Now, were there bad actors on the naval vessel that possibly sabotaged Nord Stream? Sure, it's possible. Are there good actors in the military who were watching that? Quite possibly. Are there good actors, ethical actors, in the Office of the Inspector General? It's possible. Are there bad actors in the Office of the Inspector General? Sure, it's, you know, everyone's an individual. So, pray for the Patriots and the White Hats who are trying to do the right thing. They probably have to work in secret. They probably have to hide their true motives from the public. But they're working to, you know, possibly prevent a war. Now, I think the Ukraine conflict has also called into question the whole idea of foreign aid. America sends money to all sorts of supposedly developing countries. Now, it's been said that a lot of foreign aid is really just, you know, goes into pockets of corrupt dictators. It goes to government and the leaders just pocket it and possibly funnel it to other maybe organizations or entities that benefit the politicians back in the U.S. So it's a huge money laundering operation. So I've said that I do not support, you know, Russia's military going into Ukraine other than possibly blowing up the biolabs that are working on the next pandemic. I would have preferred Russia take an economic approach like Trump did during his first term. However, I keep saying to people, whether, you know, I'm out and about, we're gonna find out a lot of things about Ukraine once this all is over. A lot of secrets are gonna shake out. You know, we already know it's a money laundering hub. We already know from other reports that they had biolabs and they were working on certain diseases. Victoria Nuland kind of like pretty much admitted this when she was questioned by Senator Marco Rubio. So that's just a taste of all the things going on in Ukraine. Ukraine has a really corrupt government. Pray for the people, support the people of Ukraine, but work to get to the bottom of the corruption in Ukraine. We know about the Azov Battalion. So Russia's supposedly getting them out. Please, you know, follow up on Elon Musk's proposal to secure peace in the region and maybe support the rightful President Trump. Moving on, here's some Good election news. Italy has a new prime minister. I don't know if she's been sworn in or she's the prime minister-elect still. Italy election. Polling finds that the wealthiest voted left, working and middle class voted conservative. This is from Breitbart. Giorgia Meloni's Brothers of Italy were the most popular party among workers and the middle class in last weekend's election, while the wealthiest Italians, along with university graduates, were more likely to vote for leftist parties. I won't call them liberals. Brothers of Italy came first in last weekend's elections with 26% of the vote, winning nearly 6 million more votes than the previous election in 2018. And according to a breakdown of voting by the firm Ipsos, the party managed to secure just over 30% of the votes of lower middle class people amid strong numbers across all income ranges. Among upper middle class people and university graduates, the left-wing Democrats were the most popular party, followed by Meloni's Brothers of Italy, the Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera reports. And the article goes on, but I thought that was interesting. It's a case of the populists versus the elites. Here's some more international election news. Brazil just had an election. Biggest victory for patriots in the history of Brazil, despite massive fraud. So there's going to be a runoff election for president. The current president, I can never remember how to pronounce his first name, but Bolsonaro, they call him the Trump of the tropics. He's moving on to the runoff election against the socialist candidate. Contrary to all polls, Brazilian President Bolsonaro made it into the runoff in yesterday's Brazilian elections. His liberal party became the strongest force in parliament. Massive irregularities seem to confirm Bolsonaro's warning about the purely electronic voting system. According to the final count, President Bolsonaro received 43.2% of the votes. Convicted criminal communist Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva won 48.43%, sending them to the runoff on October 30th. The biggest losers in the election are the polling institutes, which saw Bolsonaro at 36% and Lula da Silva at 50%. Massive irregularities seem to support Bolsonaro's warning against Brazil's purely electronic voting system, which has no paper ballots at all. Mainstream media had discounted Bolsonaro's warnings with no evidence ahead of time, comparing them to Donald Trump's challenge to the 2020 election, even calling them the big lie, a coin termed by propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels, and Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels, and now popular among Democrat election fraud deniers. On Sunday, October 2nd, contrary to all predictions, Bolsonaro was leading at 7:22 p.m. local time with 47.01% of the votes and 44% for Lula da Silva, with 41.19% of the votes counted. At 7:55 p.m. local time, 63% of the votes were counted. Bolsonaro led with 46%. Lula da Silva was closing at 45%. As the tide turned, Lula da Silva took the lead with 47.12% versus 43.32% for Bolsonaro at 8:30 p.m., with 90.26% of the votes counted. The tally ended with Lula da Silva having 48.43% and 43.20% for Bolsonaro. Disregarding the votes for other candidates, this means Bolsonaro received 51.57% of votes cast for either candidate up until 7:22 p.m., and Lula da Silva, 48.43%. Between 7:22 p.m. and 5:14 a.m. the next morning, Bolsonaro received only 44% of the votes cast for either candidate, and Lula da Silva won 55%. It was not clear what could have caused such a huge statistical anomaly. Voters shared videos that appeared to show a voting machine no longer accepting a vote for Bolsonaro. Remarkably, Bolsonaro allegedly lost the state of Minas Gerais. I'm probably butchering that. Where he began his 2022 election campaign and was almost stabbed to death by an assassin in 2018. At the same time, his candidate for the Chamber of Deputies, Nicolas Ferreira, won by a landslide. So, against socialist opponent Andre Hanones. While Bolsonaro allegedly lost to Lula da Silva, his Liberal Party was the clear winner and largest party in Parliament, with 24.9% of the Senate and 16.5% in the Chamber of Deputies, another seeming anomaly. Journalist Matthew Termond pointed out voting machines in Brazil are made by Smartmatic, originally from Venezuela. Smartmatic was headed by Lord Mark Malik Brown before he was appointed head of the Open Society Foundations by George Soros in 2021. There's been a lot to talk about Smartmatic. Writing on Facebook, Bolsonaro said, "Against all odds and against everyone, we had a bigger win in the first round in 2022 than we had in 2018. Almost 2 million more votes. We also elected the largest House and Senate caucuses, which was our top priority at this time. We won governor races in 8 states in the first election. We'll win 8 more states in the runoffs. This is the biggest victory for patriots in the history of Brazil. 60% of Brazil will be governed by people who defend our values and fight for a free country. A lot of people got discouraged by the lies spread by pollsters, who completely failed in this election. They got all their predictions wrong and are the biggest losers of this election. We beat the lies and are not going to win the runoff election in October 30th. And rightful President Trump posted on Truth Social congratulating Bolsonaro for the runoff for surviving. Now, I think I've heard from other analysts saying Bolsonaro probably won the majority of votes, but there was also, I think, like a few third-party candidates running too, and that might have split the conservative vote or the liberal party vote. And that's kind of similar to how they stole the election from Sarah Palin this year for her Senate race. There were actually 2 conservative candidates in Alaska, and they split the conservative base and let the enabled the Democrats win in that special election. So, was that third so-called conservative candidate a real conservative? I would have to dig to find that out, but it is a good news that Bolsonaro is going to survive, move on to a run in the runoff, because I think it'll be down to just him and Lula da Silva, and then we'll see someone get a clear majority, and hopefully they'll kind of like dig up dirt on the Smartmatic machines. Some more good election news here in this country. 2 more articles, then we'll call tonight. Federal judge upholds Georgia election integrity initiatives, including voter ID. Stacey Abrams most affected. This is from Gateway Pundit. Stacey, a fatal heartbeat at 6 weeks is a manufactured sound. Abrams, Democrat candidate for Georgia governor, was delivered a blow by a federal judge on Friday. U.S. District Judge Steve Jones issued a ruling that Georgia's election integrity practices, such as voter ID and citizenship checks, are legal and constitutional. Though Abrams refused to concede her election loss in 2018, the Soros-backed candidate has spearheaded efforts as a voting rights activist, founding Fair Fight, a voter protection and education organization that promotes anything goes lawless elections. And the article goes on about, talks more about her Fair Fight organization, but the fact that a federal judge has upheld voter ID and citizenship checks, things that I think most Americans do agree with, that's a good sign. That's a good sign that Georgia is getting cleaned up. When they pulled off the seal in 2020, and my buddy Charles was talking about, was tweeting me about it, I thought, this had better be a sting operation, because there's so much going on that things are out in the open. I mean, things are hidden, but we have to like bring things out in the open. Like I keep saying, we can't just arrest or correct one crime or arrest one individual. I hope that's the end of it. The swamp is deep and wide, and we have to expose it all, or else the hiders' heads will grow back. So, as the X-22 report always says, we're watching the biggest sting operation of all time. And this is a very good development towards getting, you know, the people's real choices into both state, local, and federal governments. One more article, just a quick couple paragraphs. and then I'll let you go. And this is one case I'm really looking forward to this month. October is supposed to be a really big month for court cases. Like I said, I have my heart set on the Twitter case, but this is going to be huge. Supreme Court begins new term with voting election cases at the forefront. This is from justnews.com. And I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs because that's what concerns us in this segment here. The Supreme Court begins its new term Monday with voting and election cases at the forefront. Among the cases being considered by the justices are ones on the Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965, an appeal that could impact how elections for Congress and the presidency are conducted by giving more power to state legislatures and less to state courts and colleges, taking into account race and admissions decisions, according to the Associated Press. So when the 2020 death stuff was going on, Dr. Steve Turley was giving a great analysis of what the constitutional method of electing the president is and how things have not been followed according to the law. Dr. Steve kept saying, it's up to the state legislatures to determine what the presidential election laws are in that state. They're the ones who actually have the power to certify a candidate. And for too long, certification has been done by not the state legislatures, but by state executive branches, like the state attorneys of state, or I'm sorry, secretaries of state, or the governors, or what happened in Washington on January 6th. So if the Supreme Court rules that this power does belong to the state legislatures as laid out urgently in the Constitution, what does that mean for Joe Biden? What does that mean for the 2020 election? Is it automatically decertified? Keep your fingers crossed. There's so much that, you know, we have to dig up. And this ruling could come in time to save the 2022, the midterm elections. So there are good developments all around. You know, the deep state, they want a war. They want conflict. They want a distraction from their crimes. And we're just not going to give it to them. We're not going to take the bait. The way we fight corruption is we investigate and we vote and we bring things to light. Then we crack our knuckles. You never want to throw the first punch, you know. In martial arts, they have a saying, there's no first punch in karate. Martial arts is strictly for self-defense. So I think sometime I need to do a video about martial arts and just what to do in case, you know, violence rears its ugly head. But that's for another time. I'm going to let you go. Like I said, if you find this fun content valuable, please give it a thumbs up, share it, and subscribe. And buy my merch. Sign up for our website and digital marketing. And get on to uphold.com. So, I'm Nate Houseman, letting you go. And I want to let you know, it's okay to stand up for yourself. Have a good one.